this is where Texas politics gets interesting. Here again are two guys named Jason, some great guests, and cold Texas beer for another smart conversation on Y'allitics, the unofficial political podcast of Texas.
All right, thanks for being with us again, everybody. So what's going on in Texas politics this week?
My gosh, can you? I would not want to be a candidate right now because I'm not sure where I'm going to run.
You know? I wouldn't want to be a candidate ever anymore, but especially now.
For as angry as you are, you should run for office, man. You should.
That's the thing, is that they start bringing up your temper history and it doesn't look good.
I don't know, man.
Although maybe that's a selling point now.
Yeah, you'd be fine, I think. Yeah,
I've mellowed a lot.
Yeah, whatever. We're back at one of our favorite places, Four Corners Brewing Company in the Cedars neighborhood near downtown Dallas, just south of the skyline.
Yeah.
What are you having today, man?
I am having a lager, and it's a Vienna lager, and it's known as Tattoo Mania, and that spoke to me.
It did, because you have, what, three tattoos?
Right? You want to see them?
No, I'm good. That's all right.
You sure? Because they're not visible right away.
This is a time when our listeners are thinking, gosh, I'm glad I'm listening to this and not watching this, right? I'm having the local Buzz, Creature of Habit, so I always go to the standard beer they have here, the local Buzz.
I keep saying you are an old man before your time.
I'm four days older than you.
You do the same thing exactly every single day.
Well, let's get into what we're talking about this week on this episode here. The three-judge panel in El Paso, federal court in El Paso, dropped a bombshell that I think Democrats that I was talking to, they were expecting this based on the testimony.
I think they were expecting it, but not sure because of the times we're in.
Yeah.
They were hopeful, but not cocky about it. But they got exactly what they wanted.
And so this is this three-judge panel. You had an Obama-appointed judge and a Donald Trump-appointed judge. Both said, listen, the brand new Republican maps that were just drawn this summer, the 2025 maps that were used for congressional redistricting, we're not using those. We're going to use the 2021 maps. We're reverting back to the old maps.
And just to remind you, in case you haven't kept up with this super closely because you don't do a political podcast, the reason
in case you're new to us here,
the reason these maps were redrawn is because President Trump basically reached out to Texas and said, hey, I'd like to juice the next election as much as we can here. See if you can find us five seats that we can flip that are currently Democrat and turn those into Republican seats. And so Republicans here in this state, it's a controversial effort, but they very willingly said, hey, yeah, let's get down to drawing some maps. Let's redraw these districts so that we can include enough Republican voters to get five more seats picked up. You'll remember Democrats in the state legislature left the state. The governor, sending people after them to try to bring them back because they were trying to hold this up from happening.
Sure.
But it eventually went through. And, Republicans here were crowing about it and feeling good about it. And now we see this court ruling that says, no, you got to throw that map out. We're going to go back to the map that was there before.
And this map, our guest is going to correct me if I'm wrong here, I believe this map wasn't drawn by Republicans in Texas. This came from Republicans outside of Texas in D.C.
Yeah.
So this goes back to, I think we had an episode in Illinois outside Chicago when we went up there and we talked to Democrats up there who broke quorum. Breaking quorum for Democrats hasn't been all that successful the past two decades. This one was successful.
Yeah.
This raised the attention. They went to a major media market. They went to Chicago. They got a lot of people on board with this, people listening to them. And it wasn't Albuquerque. It wasn't, the edges of southern Oklahoma where they went to. And because of what the Democrats from Texas did, it got the attention of California. California asked voters to let them bust up the maps. And now California is trying to cancel out these five maps, five Republican districts.
Yeah, they basically did the same thing.
Sure.
They took five, safer Republican districts and turned those into, very likely Democratic pickups in the midterm elections. And so, there was one Texas Democrat who said that this is probably the most important thing that he's ever done in his political career, to leave the state, draw attention to this whole thing, and get some balance on, redistricting in other states.
So now the big question is, are these new maps, this new decision from the three-judge panel, is this new decision going to hold? Are we going to run? Are the 2021 maps the original maps we had?
Or do we go back to square one?
Or will the Supreme Court get involved, and will they issue a stay, and we'll go back to the 2025 maps? Let's bring in our guest right now. It's Matt Engel. He is the executive director of the Lone Star Project, a longtime friend of ours, Democratic veteran, I would say. It's good to see you, man.
That's a fair way to say it.
Well, yeah, well, what should I call you? Consultant, strategist, veteran, all the above, right?
Activist. I run a PAC, and what we're trying to do is bring fair leadership to Texas, and it's a hard job.
It is today, you know, with kind of where we are. But let me ask you this. So right now we're all waiting to see, does the Supreme Court take action on this? The state leaders, Governor Abbott says, listen, we're going to appeal straight to the Supreme Court. What does the Supreme Court do?
Well, the Supreme Court at the very outset has to decide whether or not they're going to grant a stay. The three-judge federal court has granted an injunction blocking the use of the Trump Abbott discriminatory map, ruled it to be discriminatory, and so right now the 2021 map is in play. It kind of settles things out, makes it a little bit clearer, and so the question is, will the Supreme Court kind of throw it back into chaos by staying that decision?
Basically negating the decision while they think about it.
Just basically saying that, the three-judge panel, its decision, let's just set it aside. You can have a trial later on the merits of that, but we're going to allow the map to go forward that the Republicans drew. Instead, they've said what would be more common was that they would say, look, we will maybe take this up later, but we're not going to stop the lower court's decision, especially since the map that we go back to is, as you said, Jason, that's a map that Republicans drew. This is not some court-ordered map. This
is not some.
The map that's in play right now is one that the Republicans drew. It's already the subject of litigation, and the plaintiffs, our side, has agreed that that's a suitable map to go back to. So that's the most rational thing to do, but we don't know that that's what
the
court's going
to do. But as a Democrat, though, do you have any confidence at all that the conservative majority Supreme Court is going to rule in Democrats' favor?
I'm worried about it. As you know, you'd be crazy not to be worried about it. We were worried about the three-judge panel. It was two Republicans and one Democrat. But what that court did was it relied on the law. It looked at the facts. The facts are overwhelming here, that what Abbott and the Republicans did under this map was systematically undermine minorities. And they said they were going to do it. They promoted racial discrimination as a reason for doing it. And the court called them on it. And so it would mean that the Supreme Court would really be denying the facts of the case. And it would be a very, very political decision. But, you know, we've seen some political decisions, yeah. So we're worried about it.
And you say you're worried about it. So going into this, when we had this three federal judges on this panel looking at this, I just want to do a test of your crystal ball. You listened to the arguments. You knew what had happened in court. Were you pretty confident that the decision was going to be what it is? And what does your crystal ball tell you about what the Supreme Court will do?
Yeah, I feel the same way now as I did before. We saw what was happening at the hearing. We saw the evidence really just be overwhelming. Again, the map was challenged because it was drawn with racial intent and drawn with an over-reliance on race. If anybody paid attention to this, you just watch TV. You saw Republican after Republican say, we're going to undo this map because it has too many coalition districts. And coalition districts are defined as districts that are a majority non-white. Just by saying that, they've made it clear that race is their intent. Greg Abbott said that over and over again. Greg Abbott was probably our best witness. And, you know, he had a lawyer in the courtroom to try to object every time they brought up something he said to a lawyer or to a colleague, but we didn't need that because, you know, we just needed Jake Tapper to interview him, and he did. And so Abbott said what needed to be said to expose this map as being drawn with discriminatory intent. If the Supreme Court looks at the facts, if they look at what lays down and they consider what's been done in the past, they would not grant a stay. They'd allow the process to go forward under its normal timeline, which would mean that the court's order of the 2021 map would stay in place. But, you know, we've seen some political decisions out of the Supreme Court and out of other courts. So, you know, we're not going to count any chickens at this point.
And Matt, time is of the essence here. The filing period is open when people who want to run for office can officially file to be on the ballot. That filing deadline is December the 8th. The Supreme Court doesn't make decisions fast, but they could issue a stay. A judge could issue a stay here. Before we hit the record button here, you mentioned that it wouldn't just be one justice issuing a stay on this. that justice who was over our district is Justice Samuel Alito. He would consult with the other justices before deciding whether to intervene in this case?
It would be extraordinary for him to unilaterally make a decision of this much importance, that he would at the very least survey his colleagues before any stay is granted. And again, it would be extraordinary.
And if he issues a stay, though, that means that the 2025 maps, the brand new ones this summer, they would go back into effect, right?
That's correct. That would be a case of whiplash. We'd be going right back to the other maps. That's why the least disruptive thing, the thing that's most understandable to candidates, to incumbents, and to voters, is to let the 2021 map go forward.
But what a mess, man. I mean, the 2025 maps were passed into law. The court said, no, let's go back to the 2021 maps. Now the 2025 maps might be back on the table again if that's what the conservative majority Supreme Court decides, if they issue a stay. If I'm a voter, if I'm someone who wants to run for office, what do I do?
Well, my advice, and I've been giving this advice to members of Congress and to candidates, is file now and file under the map as that's in effect now, and that's the 2021 map.
Why are you telling them that, though?
I'm telling them that because that's the map that they've run in the past, that's the maps have been administered, and it's the map that's in effect right now. If they have everything stopped right now, they would run in the 2021 map. And they would run under a map that, you know, has been approved by the legislature. It's been used in two previous elections. I mean, this monopoly table got turned over by Donald Trump and Greg Abbott. And the court has now pulled the table back up and put the game back on it. Let's play the game, and it's a 2021 game.
I've flipped many monopoly boards in my time, and it is hard to put that board back together, and especially if it gets flipped again after this.
That should not surprise anybody who knows you that you flip many monopoly boards. Are you surprised about that? He's flipped monopoly boards?
Yeah, well, he said he's pickleball.
Yeah, I do it in pickleball.
Don't ever play
too.
Pickleball against him either.
I'll flip the court if that's
like
what it takes.
John McEnroe heavy right here, yeah.
Throwing
John McEnroe's
that
happen on this guy.
Gets expensive. The thing here is that, so we have different representatives, including Julie Johnson in Dallas, who was looking at having to go to a different district, when the lines were redrawn. Now she's saying, okay, good, I can sign up and stay in the district that I'm in right now. And you're saying that's sound advice, but what happens if the Supreme Court does change things back? What do these candidates all do, and how do they raise money right now? Because if I'm sitting on a bunch of cash and I want to support a candidate, Republican or Democrat, I might hold on to that cash right now because I'm not sure that the district they're running in is the one that they're going to be running in for sure.
Yeah, this unsettled atmosphere is a tough way to raise money right now, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Now, if you're an incumbent Democrat or a incumbent Republican, you've been raising money all along, and you're still going to be voting in Congress for another year, and you've got a megaphone that's a little bit better than a candidate, so it's really tougher for the candidates than it is for incumbents. But that's why I believe, I hope, that the court will not throw just another layer of disruption into this thing. And there's a legal principle called the Purcell rules, and which they're not supposed to make major changes too late in the cycle. And so
late in the cycle.
Exactly. And so that's why you would hope that things would kind of settle out now. It's certainly better for the process, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. Better for the process is if we go forward with the three-judge panel's decision. They had a full hearing. They heard from both sides. They made a ruling. They've ordered the 2025 map be set aside and the 2021 map be run on. That's the thing that would cause the least disruption.
But as things stand right now, do you see Republicans or Democrats in Texas who are in a race that they're vulnerable in now because they were thinking that this 2025 map was going to be in play, and now we're back to the 2021 one?
I don't think there's any Democrats because, especially here in North Texas, they were very smart. Mark Vesey and Julie Johnson and Jasmine Crockett, they all sat tight, and Mark particularly was confident that this map would be overturned by the three-judge panel. And so they waited. Now, some other people got out ahead of the game. We talked about Briscoe Cain in Houston. He could end up being filed in a in a district that's unwinnable for a Republican.
Because he was looking at that 2025 map and saying, this now looks good, and now we've reverted back.
That's correct. So he's got to be in the embarrassing position to maybe go back and say, well, never mind, I'm either not going to run for Congress at all, or I want to run for my state House seat. And he's got to, may have to do it pretty quickly.
But Al Green's another one, though. He already said he's going to run for, what, District 19 down there against
18.
18. So he's going to leave his longtime district. But now... The maps have changed.
I haven't talked to Congressman Green, but it wouldn't surprise me if you see him then refile.
Refile
at
again.
At this point, refile in District 9, which is his district.
You mentioned something called the Purcell Principle, and we're going to talk about that here because that's what's interesting. And Republicans are saying, listen, the Purcell Principle, this alliteration here, it benefits us too, is what Republicans are saying. And the simple way to describe this is court should not change election rules just prior to an election because doing so could confuse voters and create problems for officials actually administering this. Here's what's fascinating about this case here and what I did not expect, what I don't think Republicans or Democrats expected. There are three judges that make up this panel in El Paso. One's appointed by President Obama, one's appointed by President Reagan, one's appointed by President Trump. It was the Obama judge and the Trump judge that sided with Democrats. The Reagan judge issues this scathing, spicy dissent. 104 pages long.
And it was against the Trump judge in a lot of cases, not so much the Obama appointed judge.
It sounded, you know what, when I read the thing, it sounded personal to me. But let's bring in another guest here, another voice. It's a Republican, Eric Opiella. He was heavily involved last time this happened in 2011, and I called him up, and the first thing I wanted to know about was this dissent, the Reagan-appointed judge just going off on the Trump-appointed judge. Here's what he said.
Hey, Eric, thanks for being here. Let's start with that dissenting opinion from the Reagan-appointed judge, Jerry Smith. You called it spicy when you texted me, but man, I read it. It felt personal against the Trump-appointed judge.
Well, I don't think it's personal. Other than I think that Judge Smith is notably offended that how it went down. I don't know if you saw the first five pages of the opinion really talked about the procedure of how the opinion came to be, which did deviate from kind of the norm. Normally, you see dissenting opinions issued at the same time as the majority opinion. And so,
no, let me ask you that, because I read that and that seemed really inside baseball to me, who, you know, someone who reads headlines and articles as opposed to the actual, you know, 150, 200 page opinions. Why is that such a big deal that the majority opinion was released separately than the dissenting opinion?
So on three judge panels, it's supposed to be a deliberative process. It's supposed to be a process where they all get in a room, kind of like at the Supreme Court, right? They have a conference and they all get together and argue, put the best arguments forward, and then they decide that they're going to respond to each other. You see, for instance, in Supreme Court dissents, that they respond to arguments that are in the majority opinion, and then the majority opinion responds back to the dissent. And it's meant to provide that back and forth to give practitioners, right, people who read the law, an idea of what the justices in the case of the Supreme Court, in this case, the three-judge panel, is actually thinking. And it I think I've never seen something like this in an opinion before. I think a lot of people are saying that. I think it's a signal to the Supreme Court that not all is well in Denmark with regards to the majority opinion. I think that's probably why he included it.
So what do you expect the U.S. Supreme Court to do with this Texas decision?
I think it's very... Yeah, I think it's very good. They're obviously going to take the case, right? This is redistricting from Texas. We've been to the Supreme Court twice in the three times the last 15 years, right? So they're going to take the case. But more importantly, Judge Alito is responsible in the Fifth Circuit for deciding on emergency stays. And just as recently in 2022, the Purcell principle has been applied in redistricting cases to stay changes that are made within 60 days of the of the election, and so especially here, 6 months even in some cases, right? So we've already have filing that occurred. We had candidates that have been filing for over a week now. We have counties that we drew their precincts. We have sheer chaos that is out there right now as a result of the majority opinion. And I think that it's almost definite that we're going to get a stay of this just because of the Purcell principle. And that's a Supreme Court doctrine that says we don't interfere with ongoing elections.
And so if Justice Alito issues a stay, how soon would that happen, do you think? Within days, within a week or two, or what?
So just to give you some idea on the progress of how that goes, right? The state has filed a notice of appeal. Then the state has to actually have an argument, right? They write up a brief. I think they're probably going to submit that brief Monday. I think it's probably too much to ask to have them do it tomorrow, right? At least a weekend. Keep in mind, this is a 160-page opinion, over 100-page dissent. Two weeks worth of testimony. This is not something you just whip out overnight. They're going to file their opening brief arguing for the stay, probably under Purcell, and probably going into the detail as well, right? I think that the roadmap for a stay and for overturning the case is pretty much laid out in Judge Smith's dissent. So you can get a good window on where you're going to go. But the immediate issue is the stay. And Merrill versus Milligan, which is another redistricting case that the Supreme Court stayed. They eventually even overturned the map in that case, right? But they allowed the map to be used in the election and then came back 2 years later and said, we're going to throw that map out. Merrill versus Milligan is a roadmap for this. And in 2022, the Supreme Court, in almost exact circumstances, like within 6 days difference, I think we're even closer to the election than they were in Merrill, stayed the case. So I think it's almost definite it's going to happen.
Let's say the Supreme Court takes this case, which you say is going to happen here. Does the Supreme Court throw out the new Republican map and revert back to the 2021 map?
So the three-judge panel, the majority opinion, that's what the majority opinion did, right?
Sure.
The majority opinion said, you can't use the 2025 map. We're going back to the 2021 map.
Yeah.
So the stay would prevent that from happening, which means that the 2025 map would be the one that's used for the 2026 elections.
But that'd be a temporary stay, though, right? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves gaming it out here, but if that happened, it'd be a temporary stay. But the full body, the full Supreme Court would likely take this up, right?
Correct. But the time frame of the Supreme Court is not happening next year. They're not going to take this up during the term we're on, right? The October term of 2025. The docket is full. I think that case has to be fully briefed. It's going to go up and probably have an oral argument on it. I would expect we've had oral argument every time we've done redistricting before. And so that takes time, but it would be, I think that decision would be ready in time for the 2028 elections.
So your guess right now is you're thinking that the stay might happen from Justice Alito and that would put the 2025 maps back in play.
Yes.
This could be a short-lived victory for Democrats.
Yeah. I told clients of mine yesterday, the shelf life of this opinion is short.
Why
just
so?
Wait and see.
Why so?
Just because of the proximity to the election. There's well established case law that says you don't do whiplash right in front of the election, and that's what this opinion does.
So if Justice Alito from the Supreme Court issues a stay on this, though, we're going to go back to the 2025 maps. If I'm running for Congress, where do I run?
In the districts that the legislature adopted.
The new ones, the 2025 map.
Correct.
How big of a deal is this? I mean, this doesn't happen all the time. You dealt with the last one in 2011. How big of a deal is this?
It doesn't happen in a midterm election, right? We're midterm redistricting. We don't have midterm redistricting very often. In most cases, the context of redistricting is with the decennial census. And so
sure.
We don't have a valid map to go back on. You know, you would a court when enjoining the map in 2011 would not put the 2000 map in place because of the decennial census. In this case, we have a map that the three-judge panel, the majority on the three-judge panel, thought that they can go back to. Now, Judge Smith makes a pretty smart argument there that the legislation passed by the legislature expressly repealed that 2021 map. And so now the federal courts are going in and reenacting legislation that has been expressly repealed, which goes against more Supreme Court precedent. And so that's an interesting argument that I think the Supreme Court's going to consider.
And just to lay out what you think might actually play out in this case here, you think that if Justice Alito issues a stay like Texas leaders want, the full Supreme Court wouldn't take this up until the following term, which would be next year sometime, right?
So the merits of the case probably will not be reached until we are through with this cycle.
What should we be watching for next few days, next few weeks? Something from Justice Alito?
Well, Texas has to respond, right? Texas is going to file its opening brief. I would imagine that the plaintiffs are going to file their responsive brief to the Texas brief. It's not going to be in the next couple of days. I think it's probably going to be in the span of a week or two. Wait till after Thanksgiving. If you remember 2011 redistricting, we had a new map that was issued over the Thanksgiving break. I remember this. And in that case, we actually delayed the primaries. I don't think that's going to happen this time, just simply because of how the procedure is going here. And we had oral argument before the Supreme Court. I remember it was after January 1st. It was the first week in January. It was cold in D.C. I remember being there.
You were there.
I was there.
But you don't think that at the end of the day that this is going to push the primary from March to May or even later?
I do not.
Just based on the what's at stake here or what?
So the logistics, you might see, if you do have more whiplash back and forth, you might see maybe a couple of days of an extended filing deadline. But we're at a point in the process where all the counties have redrawn their precincts already to match the new map. I think if a county is smart, which I think most of them were, they split precincts instead of having to draw, having to go roll that back even in the event of a decision like this. So I think the election logistics are in place to, if we get this resolved by the 8th, right? That's the filing deadline. I think we're going to have our primary on time.
Sounds good, Eric. Good insight, man. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks.
So just in hearing that there, Matt's like, can I respond to that?
So you just heard Eric Opiello there say that, you know, listen, at the end of the day, that this benefits us too, but you wanted to respond to what he said.
Well, it tells you that it really is a high bar that Judge Brown cleared in order to rule that this map was a product of racial gerrymandering, because there is reason to be concerned about making changes late in the cycle because of the Purcell rule. But what would be outrageous would be to comply with Purcell to order a map that the facts have clearly demonstrated is racially discriminatory. And so what would make more sense is to order a map that you know is legal, that's been used, and then any effort to change that would then really be more against the spirit of the Purcell rule.
Well, let me ask you this, too. Would Democrats also, I'm just trying to figure out what each side's arguments are here, would Democrats also argue that, you know, with regard to the Purcell rule, if you don't want it to go right up to the next election, then that makes the case for not redistricting in the middle of a cycle like this in the first place,
middle of a decade,
and necessitating a court challenge that gets decided right before the filing deadline.
Well, that points to the mess that we've got into with redistricting at every level, because the court has determined that partisan gerrymandering is okay, and that legislatures can redraw when they want to.
And they are, Democrat and Republican.
You've created a circumstance in which there's an incentive after every election to go in and refine it and try to help yourself. Now, the problem Republicans have in Texas and other places is Texas is a majority-minority state, that Anglos make up a minority of the state's population. Under our current map, the 2021 map, Anglos control 19 out of the 38 states or 38 seats. Districts.
Yeah.
And so they've already kind of pushed that to the limits. And so if you take just the 13 seats the Democrats have and try to reduce that by five, mathematically, there's almost no way to do it except to undermine minority voters.
Well, this is good, though, for some Republicans. This is good news to go back to that 2021 map, because there were some Republicans here in Texas whose districts got diluted, where some of the Republican voters were carved out of their districts so that they could be carved into another district. So some of them individually may be breathing a sigh of relief, even if the party as a whole does not like this change back.
Oh, I don't know, but I bet if you did a private poll, if you had a confidential poll of those Republicans, they're thrilled by this. And there's a couple of them that probably announced
their
retirement.
You think they're thrilled?
They're thrilled to go back to the 21 maps.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're thrilled to go back to the 2021 maps. And they weren't just worried about there being Democrats in their districts. They were worried about being new Republicans in their district. Mm. They trust their own member party less than they do ours.
So, listen, we're waist deep in this right now for voters, for election officials, for candidates, for parties. Do you expect the March primary to be delayed?
No. It's not impossible. If it is delayed, it's going to be something even more unusual. That would mean that Greg Abbott would have to decide, well, I'm going to fix this. I'm going to call another special session, and I'm going to draw another map. And in order to get that administered, I'm going to move the reopen the filing deadline later and move the primary. That's what it would take. I don't expect the courts to move the primary.
State Rep. Nicole Carter, we interviewed on Inside Texas Politics, said, listen, she didn't rule that out, that the governor might do that.
Let me tell you, Greg Abbott has really demonstrated a level of harsh partisanship that I haven't seen. I think that if Donald Trump told him to roll over and beg, do a backflip, he'd do it. I think if he thinks that that would gain him a pat on the head from Donald Trump, he might do it.
Mm. Let's talk about the other states involved here now, because we mentioned off the top that California, directly because of what Texas did its own redistricting. The National Democratic Party said that Republicans in Texas and more broadly underestimated Democrats here, that they thought the party would just roll over and maybe complain about this but not really do anything substantive. Do you share that view?
Well, I share the worry that Democrats wouldn't respond, and I'm very pleased that they have, because for years, for decades, Democrats always talked about a bipartisan redistricting and get away from the partisanship behind redistricting, and in many states put those types of laws in place unilaterally. But California did it right. They drew a map and they took it to the voters, and the voters approved it overwhelmingly. And in drawing their map, while it was partisan, which is allowed, it didn't undermine the voting strength of blacks and Hispanics. And so I think that, Abbott and Trump and those guys, they've made a mistake. They created a circumstance in which California was able to do right, something that they tried to do in Texas the wrong way.
Okay, but if you've ever sat on a jury, which I haven't, have y'all? Have you ever been on a jury?
I've not.
No, I've been called plenty
of
times.
I've never been picked.
I'm going to knock on wood, fellas.
So they'll tell you if you're on a jury, though, that you're supposed to only consider the facts that have been presented to you in the courtroom. Much the same if you're before the Supreme Court, if they take up this case from Texas and look to see whether they should get involved here. They're supposed to be looking at what's happening here. But do you think that the California issue is going to play into this? Now, these justices are fully aware that California just picked up likely five more Democratic seats in the next midterm elections. Do you think that justices will consider that when they're deciding whether to get involved here in Texas?
I worry about it. It would be wrong if they did it, but you can't help but worry about it. I worried about it before we got our decision. The California map has also been challenged. I could see a circumstance in which they say, okay, we're going to strike down both maps and go back to square one. You could see that. But right now, it's fairly characterized as a real screw-up by the Republicans to dare California to do it right, and then California did it right.
That's interesting what you say about the possibility that they could just strike down both of those. There is a California Republican who has put forth a measure that would, it hasn't been, voted on yet, but, in Congress, that would prohibit this kind of, mid-census decade redistricting like what we're seeing in these different states. Do you think that that effort, that that way of thinking might get more traction now that we're seeing such disruption because of mid-decade redistricting?
Not unless all the corners are knocked off of MAGA and Trump's got to be gone. I mean, what we think about Democrats and Republicans from the past, that just doesn't exist anymore. You see what John Cornyn has done is just humiliate himself to try to, you know, somehow get in the same crazy lane as Ken Paxton. And so the notion of fair-minded Republicans is nostalgia at this point. I think that something else in that party has to change before you have that type of circumstance.
You said something a moment ago that I don't know if our viewers and listeners actually understand. It is perfectly legal, according to the Supreme Court, according to case law right now, to redistrict for partisanship, to put more Republicans. But you can't redistrict to isolate voices of minorities.
Yeah.
And I don't think enough people realize this, but and that's where that's kind of the argument that was playing out in El Paso, because the Republicans were like, oh, no, this is for, partisanship. But their earlier comments was, this is because of we didn't draw it right back in 21.
Again, you have no less than a half a dozen times that Greg Abbott said on camera.
He wasn't the only one. Yeah.
Out loud. And then you also had during the consideration of the map, and the court laid this out, you had the chairman of the committee and the author of the bill talk about the racial makeup of the districts. The problem they have in Texas is that, again, the map is already about as extreme from a partisan standpoint as it can get. Mm. In order to create more Republican districts, you have to target by minorities. This get a little complicated, but what they do is, it's not just a matter of taking Democratic precincts and putting them in some of them in Republican districts. They have to take the right Democratic precincts. What they want to do is have high population, low turnout. That points them straight to Hispanics. And so when you're just looking at a map that's shaded red and blue, that's not good enough. You're going to end up making some Republicans vulnerable. You got to turn on that racial shading so that they know how to move the Hispanics. And one of the important things in the court's decision and in Judge Brown's decision is he not only said that the process and the language the Republicans used was indications of racial discrimination, he said the way the map itself was drawn. He did not buy or believe that the map guard didn't turn on racial shading. And that's why even if you cleared out all the rhetoric, even if Abbott hadn't said the things that he said, the map itself is evidence of racial discrimination.
That was a Trump judge
right.
who said that, yeah.
Let me ask you this. So the Trump administration has been, you know, openly aggressive about this, though, and they're undaunted by these sorts of things. They're still pressuring other GOP-led states. Hey, we want you to redraw your maps and squeeze out some more Republican districts in the midterms next year as well. What do you think this does to that? This huge court ruling here in Texas, does it throw cold water on those efforts now? Or does it make Republicans in those states say, we're going to do this, but we're going to do it more carefully so that we don't fall into that trap?
No, I think it discourages them because they see that Trump talked Greg Abbott and everybody in Texas into a mess. I think also what's happened on this Epstein Files thing, and that you've got Republicans who have stood up and forced the Trump to swallow his pride and to let go of his objections to the Epstein Files. I think that shows that they can get away with not just following the line on every single thing.
Matt, my last question. You don't think the primary is going to be delayed. You feel confident. You said that the Supreme Court, if they get involved, that they will rule for Democrats here. What should we be watching for next?
Well, it's not very complicated. We've got to look for the decision from the Supreme Court as to whether or not it will grant a stay.
That's within days, you said,
yeah,
right?
And that's literally within a week, 10 days at the most, certainly before filing ends. If they don't grant the stay, then okay, we have a maps to run in. If they do, then it throws everything back into chaos. People have to decide where they're going to run, what they're going to do.
Mm. I'll ask you this. Are there any Democrats in Texas that you know of who are a little bit bummed about this because they thought, man, I was actually going to run in one of those districts where there's a Republican now and their district has been diluted enough to where if we have this, you know, off-year election, which tend to benefit the, you know, party that's not in power, Democrats in this case, and I might have had a chance to pick them off. Do you know of anybody who's been in that category?
Not a one, but if there is one of those, they'd know that that probably wouldn't be a good thing to bring up with me.
Don't mention it to Matt. Yeah, yeah,
some things you just don't say out loud, right?
Matt will show you his teeth. That's true. Matt Engel, great to see you, man. Thanks for the insight, as always. Always appreciate the context and the perspective on this, because the headlines.
Great to be here. Yeah, we may have to talk again before December 8th. Yeah, because we don't know where this is going.
I mean, you know, it could be this afternoon, you know.
Yeah, so. Within days. Yeah, exactly.
These are crazy times to be alive.
Yeah. Matt Engel from the Lone Star Project, really appreciate that. Thanks so much. We appreciate you watching and listening as well.